You're listening to Casterbus. My name is Christian Corley. Listening and talking along with me is James McLean. We're here to discuss some recent events in the world of Doctor Who. James, how are you doing?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good. I'm quite well myself as well.
Oh, sorry, as I meant to reciprocate.
It was taken as read.
I see.
Anyway, so... Oh, look at that. Well, actually, this is probably worth a mention, actually. It's absolutely nothing to do with Doctor Who. As we record this, there's been a World Cup final football match taken place, which I wasn't watching because I struggled with most football as it is, so I wasn't going to make any exception for anyone else's football. And my sister's just messaged me to say that Bob Geldof was in the same bar as her watching the match.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, yeah, so where the England women's football team have just won the World Cup against Germany. So there you go. Anyhow, that's the wider world, which we're not really interested in right now because we're here to talk about Doctor Who. First of all, Segun Akinola has announced he will be leaving Doctor Who with the next episode, which, I mean, it's not a huge surprise. Many are speculating that Davies is bringing back Murray Gold, who worked on Doctor Who through to 2005 to 2017. I'm not so sure it will be Murray Gold, simply because it's not that long since he left. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. It would be the sort of thing that Davis does. But yeah, I agree. It would be very odd. It would almost feel like, I don't know, it could mean two things, couldn't it? It could either mean that Gold left perhaps when he didn't really want to and is therefore happy to come back. Or it could be, which seems to be the case, is that Davis's production was a very enjoyable, creative world, and people seem to be happy to come back to it.
Yeah, it could be that. Then again, I mean, in fairness, he worked more on Moffat's Doctor Who than on...
That is true.
...Davies.
But that's still the point, though, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. The point isn't that... it's not to say he didn't like working on Moffat's, but I'm saying that there seems to be a stronger magnet to Davis's creative world than... Maybe Moffat's, which, you know, through hearsay and conversations was sometimes strained for various reasons. So maybe, or maybe not. We don't know, do we? We don't even know if he's coming back. So
we don't. And I mean, on the same note, there has been a rumour that I'm pretty sure I've seen it somewhere. I don't seem to be able to find it in time for this episode. Mention of Stephen Moffat coming back as well to write in the next series of Doctor Who. Is that a surprise?
It's the same thing, isn't it? Is it because, you know, that Davis is quite easy? Well, he's, by his own admission, he's not always easy to get on with, but the results and the dynamics is something that people enjoyed. People I knew who worked on that part of that production really enjoyed it and felt very much part of a family. But who's to say? With Moffat, it might simply be that, you know, it's be nice to go and do something Doctor Who without feeling the pressure of being the showrunner.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, Davis was allegedly behind the scenes quite a lot in Moffat's era, in a sort of, from what I get impression of, in a sort of friend way, in a sort of supportive friend way, I don't know. They seem to have quite...
I've been thinking about this recently. I was wondering whether it's more of a sort of Barry Letts in 1981 sort of a role, like unofficial crediting of some sort of upper executive. But then again, it may just have been as well.
I don't know.
The Russell T. Davies sounding board, maybe.
I just remember, I mean, recently I think Davis sort of said that, I think it was overshooting. I think he said that he'd spoken to Moffat about it, you know, so there's a certain amount of dialogue that goes on between the two when there shouldn't be or doesn't need to be. So it makes me wonder, as you say, that I think Davis might have had some sort of executive behind the scenes input on some of the stuff in Moffat's era.
Yeah.
Not in an executive above Moffat way, but in a sort of background way. But certainly I remember hearing several times that he was involved in conversations anyway. So maybe... Yeah, maybe he is the godfather of New Who that people are quite happy to go and work for.
I mean,
it's money either way, isn't it? I guess so. You know, you could sort of say, well, yeah, it's a gig, isn't it? It's a gig, a comfortable and easy gig to some degree. But don't know. There just seems to be a vibe, electricity around Davis's work, which seems to galvanize or attract creative people. But I don't know. I don't know. Because I say, if you read the writer's tale, you hear Davis quite honestly saying that how he could be, quite horrible when he was really stressed. So, I don't know. I don't want to over idealize
No, no, no,
his
no.
productions and sort of into something that it's not. But I don't know. It might also be that, with him coming back, there's a sort of a good vibe coming on that people are like, creatively they want to be a part of it because it's kind of an interesting, exciting thing where you have a production literally coming back to do the show after a while to have learned from its own professional pathway and also to learn from the show's successes and mistakes. And with a lot of media interest, maybe that sort of draws people back and go, yeah, I want to be part of this.
Yeah, I can go with that. Now, on a related topic, because it all is related, and something that we regularly come back to on this podcast is streaming services, and Netflix, Prime, iPlayer, Disney Plus. Now, there is a report that the BBC is in talks with Disney to stream Doctor Who from the next era of the show, essentially. The talks are apparently at an early stage. Disney Plus wouldn't own Doctor Who, but would have the rights to stream the series across foreign territories, just as it does with shows like The Walking Dead. We don't know whether or not it would be simply from the next Russell T. Davies era, or from the entire New Who era, or even the entire show. I mean, what do you think of it? There's a lot of potential for this. And there is, with things that have happened lately in terms of multiverses and things, it wouldn't be out of place. Then again, we have Doctor Who's kind of comic world relationship with Marvel already. Marvel obviously owned by Disney. Do you think this is something that can happen? I'm not sure it's going to dig into any of that crazy Death Said Fantastic Four stuff and the Seventh Doctor or anything, but I mean, you could see on Disney Plus, couldn't you?
I don't think it's going to go down the multiverse route. I think that would be an entirely different kettle of fish and a far more difficult negotiation with the BBC because that would be them losing creative control to some degree over their work, which I can't
Completely.
see them doing, not with a flagship, which Doctor Who still is a flagship for those who seem to believe that it isn't anymore. I can't see that happening. I think this is what we've sort of said many times before, that this is the way that it was going to have to go, that to get its global reach, the show to continue being something of a powerhouse for BBC has got to look at the way that it's distributed. I am so in a sense I am pleased. In a sense I find the consolidation of so many properties under singular companies uncomfortable,
Oh, yes.
as I'm sure we all do to some degree. This it's yes, it creates a far more difficult market for creatives. It sort of narrows down opportunities. It's not just about that, oh, Disney is awful or whatever people want to say. It's just simply whoever it is, as soon as whoever it is owns so much of your media, it starts to create problems, which we've seen in the past as well in the 20th century with the studios. So, yeah, in that sense, not great, but in another sense, pretty cool, that it would have a good profile, and it's got a good profile, it's got a place where people around the world can see it easily. That will potentially add to its longevity. So I've seen all the worries and the angers at the mouse now having Doctor Who, and I think a lot of it is just over exaggerated or people not quite understanding what's going on, or people just being quite possessive about their British show, which, to be honest, BBC is as well. So it's not actually an insult to them. It just seems to be a way of the Britishness that we were
Disney
very,
Plus
very
is a yeah. No, I agree.
brutal, yeah.
Disney Plus is a strange thing to me. We kind of use it only when there's something on, as it were, almost. You know what I mean? I mean, for something like iPlayer, you can use most of the time. You dip in and out of because there's things there that you probably want to check out. Amazon Prime, again, there's a lot in there. Some excellent movies in there to for your weekends. What's the other one? Give me another one. Throw another one on me.
Now
Now
TV.
we occasionally go for Now TV if we want to spend a few weeks watching music documentaries on Sky Arts. I love the Sky Arts music documentaries. They're so good. And that's that. And then with Disney Plus, it's like we only watch Disney Plus if there's actually a series on. So we went weeks and weeks without watching Disney Plus at all. And then recently we've watched Miss Marvel, which absolutely loved Miss Marvel. Really, such a good show. And we're also watching the second series of Only Murders in the Building. And when those both finished, I'm not convinced we'll be watching the Cassian Andor show, for example. And obviously, we watched Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't think we'll be watching Cassian Andor because my wife's not really interested in it. I'm not sure we'll be watching the next Marvel series either. So it's a bit, it's like it's there, and you feel like you don't want to unsubscribe to it as well. Which
Well, then it's
obviously
doing its,
benefits them. Yeah, exactly.
yeah,
Exactly.
it's very much how their model works, isn't it? I mean, I've been thinking this
Completely.
last week, looking at my like, could I get rid of some of these streamers? Because I mean, there is a crazy thing that because they're not annual, obviously some people do with Prime, you can just dip in and out, just drop them for a month, and then come back if you want to. There's nothing to stop you doing that, and we don't. Because I was thinking that with Disney, and then I was thinking, oh, but I'm still watching Legion, season three of Legion, and I'm really, I want to finish that. And I started Miss Marvel, and I've not got too far with it. And that's the way the streams need to work. And I find that very difficult because I have Prime, but that's on an annual, which is going up soon, which is disturbing. But when Amazon has to raise its prices against a cost of living, given that, how much money Amazon makes is a there's a yeah but Amazon, as you say, it's got some good stuff. Netflix, I know people rag on Netflix a lot these days, but I mean, I love it for the Korean dramas. They've got some great Korean dramas, and The Extraordinary Attorney Woo seems to be hitting off well in the West, which is a really good series if you're interested in law dramas based around lead character who's autistic. Is a really good show.
I
Yeah,
haven't
it
watched
is hard to.
Netflix for a long time until very recently, and I started watching Man vs. B.
Oh, I was tempted with that. I don't know why.
It's
There
not.
was just something.
Yeah, I quite like it. It's kind of nice because he's not. He's looks obviously he looks like Mr. Bean for very obvious reasons. Then again, I say that he still doesn't look anything like Edmund Blackadder. So you know, and he's kind of a nice character, which is a bit of a change for him because you know Johnny English and Mr. Bean and Blackadder, they're both. They're all varying degrees of a-holes, aren't they? And whereas this guy, he's more of a inept fool who is well-meaning and quite a pleasant man. So that's kind of a nice turn for it. And it's the whole setup is very good as well. So I think, and the special effects of the bee are very good too. So there's some good things
Oh, well,
happening
I
in it.
might watch it. I might watch it.
It's
I'm
just
going
the
to finish
10
Stranger
minute thing
Things
is
as well.
very odd because it's more like a movie, and they've cut it up into 10 minute episodes.
How was
So.
that? No, I've not watched it. I've just been tempted and I've seen it scroll through. But yeah, Stranger Things, been watching that. It's good. Amazon Prime, Vox Machina's a very interesting cartoon based on a D&D legacy, which is again, a fascinating strand of business and creativity that has evolved in from that. It's just hard to drop them, isn't it? And
It
yet,
is,
with
it
the
is.
cost of living's going up, you're like, I need to drop some of this stuff, really. And what do you do? And I agree with you, Disney looks like the weaker one, and yet somehow it isn't. It's got a lot of good stuff on there, strangely. But
We stumbled into the penultimate episode of Game of Thrones last night.
oh dear, yes.
Well, you say, oh dear. Now, obviously, I'm watching this completely out of context this time. Every other episode of Game of Thrones I've watched in order. I haven't watched a full episode of Game of Thrones We watched the first 5 minutes of the pre-credit sequence of the very first episode about 6 weeks ago. That's the only thing we've watched out of order until last night, and we watched the penultimate episode.
So when you've watched them all in order up to when?
From beginning to end.
Okay, and then you just dipped back into the penultimate.
Then accidentally dipped back into the penultimate episode last night after accidentally hitting the very beginning of the first episode a few weeks ago.
I see.
Yeah. But we watched the entire thing, and it was very, very different watching it without the whole weekly thing, without knowing, because it took about half an hour before we worked out which episode it was as well. we didn't check. We just thought we'd watch it. No one could be bothered to pick up the remote control just to see the legend, you know, series 6, episode 5, or series 8, episode 5. So we're watching quite a bit of it, and it felt very different. It didn't feel, when I watched it in 2019, whenever it was, it felt like it was a bit of a rush to the end. Whereas watching it last night, and I think these are sort of 80-minute episodes or something like that, it didn't feel a rush at all. It seemed well-paced. Now, this might be because I was watching it on Sky Atlantic, and you get adverts every 10 minutes. It may have been partly because of that, I'm not sure, but it did feel, in this completely different context, it felt completely different to as it did watching it as part of the series and knowing that the following episode was the last episode.
Well, look, step back, Doctor Who fans. Just back off. I want to talk about this. I think the problem was with this was the series felt rushed. I think after almost to a comical point that they'd had creatures from the north slowly coming down for 6 to 7 series, and then suddenly that's over in two episodes, three episodes. Yeah, yeah. I think that was where it felt like almost like a Monty Python sketch of, you know, a sort of an expansion of Sir Lancelot sort of rushing towards the castle for ages, and then suddenly he's there and it's over. It's that kind of problem with it. I actually found most of the episodes I didn't have much of an issue with. And I thought that, I've always said, Game of Thrones should have ended on that episode. The end of that episode should have been it. It would have been a dark and sort of open-ended end to it, which told you everything you needed to really know about the show, which was like kind of, yeah. You picked your leader, and that's what happens. You picked the wrong one, which just felt totally in tone with the whole show. Totally in tone of the idea that, you know, that there are no beginnings and ends in Game of Thrones. It just, you know, life just moves on with different challenges. So, you know, you get to that point and, yeah, you've screwed up. You've picked the wrong person, mate, and they've lost it. And I even found, you see, I'm being careful after a few years in case people haven't watched it. I even found her path in season 6 made total sense to me. I was really surprised when people were just going like, oh, I couldn't stand it, because suddenly she changed her personality and she started doing things which weren't in her. And I thought they were exactly in her. You've got someone who has been propped up by other people to keep her, you know, to keep strong. And then by that episode, she's lost it all. You know, she's not got the people advising her anymore. And she is angry and sometimes quite a brutal leader, and that's what you get.
So
I found it absolutely fine. What got me was the episode after, which was terrible on so many levels.
Lord of the Rings, doesn't it, at the end?
And it just tries to cross T's and dot I's in the way that doesn't need to, and spends most of its time trying to almost establish potential spin-offs that they could backdoor in the future, which apparently they are going to do now.
With Matt Smith, which brings us to Doctor Who.
Well done.
Thank you. So that is the roundabout way of us saying that there is a rumour that the Doctor Who may be streamed globally on Disney Plus, or it may not. Early negotiations are taking place.
Even Disney Plus at that point must be going like, well, wait a sec. Yeah, this isn't about Doctor Who. It's not even long about us. You know, you've gone past this. You're now talking about stuff that's on Sky and Now TV. You know, you've just blown us both back. Yeah, you don't do that to the mouse.
Do what I like to mouse. Yeah. Bit of cheese. It's anyone's. Chris Chibnall has Instead, he's not writing for Doctor Who ever again.
Did Moffat say that? I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah, speaking, and so did Russell T Davies. Speaking to Radio Times, Chris Chibnall says, absolutely never again. Clear red line, final script. I never expected to come back after working with Stephen, really, and I turned it down a couple of times after that. I never thought I'd be offered the job and built into that is why I wanted to keep it to a very specific 3-series thing. But when he was originally announced, apparently it was a 5-year plan. But there you go.
But then very early on, I mean, I remember, you know, when we were talking about it, there were suggestions it'd be a 3-year thing.
Yes.
So I think it has been a 3-year thing for a while. Whether when he went into the idea of it, it was going to be 5 years is different. But I think certainly during the first year it was clearly a 3-year thing.
Yeah.
So it was him and Jodie, wasn't it? Jodie was also like, it's a 3-year thing.
Yes. People come into a job saying I'll do it for this length of time. It's like a football manager saying that they're going to win the league in the next season or whatever. And, you know, it doesn't happen. Manager leaves after 6 weeks of the first season because they're bottom of the league and doesn't turn out the way they planned it. Nothing's ever going to turn out the way you planned it. Doctor Who's had like 3 series across 5 years. So, you know, it's not big. I mean, there's more important things I'd like to worry about than things like that, isn't there really? It's just a TV show, guys. No, really, it is. So hang on, Gerald's got something to say about, there you go. Well, everything's back to normal now. So, yeah, so that's what Chibnall says about it. And it's, I mean, I would like to see him back again. James and I did a series of podcasts earlier this year about Chibnall's previous Doctor Who contributions and a couple of his new series of his era contributions to the show. He hasn't been a bad Doctor Who writer. And he's done some interesting scripts. And, I mean, we both largely enjoyed Flux. So, yeah, we're going to leave the Chris Chibnall era behind in a few weeks' time. And it's going to be looked upon in a very different way to how it was actually at the time. Very much like most things. Humankind, civilization looks back on things. And it's very different looking back on it to how it was actually living through it. So,
or more specifically, the McCoy years. Because because that was the time which everyone loathed and hated in Doctor Who fandom up until 2006 and 2007, when suddenly it was like the golden opus as much as John Pertwee's era. Yes, I remember that change. I remember that shift, mates. I remember.
Yeah. I remember that as well. That was bizarre. Especially as you know, you could be. There was this thing, wasn't there, called Usenet, and there was news groups, and there was things called flame wars in the late 90s.
Oh yeah,
over who was the best doctor, John Pertwee or Sylvester McCoy? There was no one else got a look in. It was like A was best or B was best. Basically, it wasn't anything to do with Hartnell or Troughton or Baker for obvious reason because he's the winner. Davison, the other Baker, or even McGann. It was always between Pertwee and
it was about essentially. It was about classicists and romanticists.
Yes,
because that's really what it is. Because the Pertwee era carried the very traditional fans sat in the Pertwee era that was the best, while the McCoy era, to be fair, the Pertwee era did this as well. It sort of mixed things up a bit and was doing some very unusual things at the back end. And
it was.
That is the sort of, you know, it was, that seems to be there was a sort of romantic love of that era. There was an acknowledgement that it wasn't perfect, but there was something special going on, which the classic Doctor Who fans, which is what they seem to be the ones who were very much the Doctor Who was framed in a very, very particular way and worked in a very particular way. And therefore Pertwee was a perfect example of perfect Doctor Who. And they would look at McCoy and go, you know, Happiness Patrol, what's that with, you know, Bertie Bassett? And people go, well, actually there's a strong political subtext there that's talking about 80s conservative values, but that would be ignored. There was that sort of really weird fight going on between these two, which was crazy because they both mixed things up. Both eras mixed things up. Both of them had very traditional elements, and both of them, their doctors were kind of against the grain. I mean, the Pertwee Doctor was very much against the grain of what Troughton had been and what Hartnell had been. And McCoy ended up being very much against the grain of pretty much all of them to a large degree. It's just like, yeah, but those battles. And then, yeah, they were all great. And it was now Eccleston that was the problem.
Well, Christopher Eccleston says he's recorded something special for the 60th anniversary for Big Finish. Nothing to do with television, and I think it's probably going to stay that way. But just going back to what you were saying there, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, as I expect you to and as you always do, but I think that the reason why the McCoy era was reappraised is because you can draw a line from various late era McCoy stories, but certainly Survival, through Rose and onwards, in terms of pace and well, just mainly the pace and the style of the show as well. If you watch Survival compared to Time of the Rani, they feel very, very different, don't they?
Yeah.
And there's you know, Remembrance of the Daleks is a very, very quick cut show. There's so many fast edits throughout Remembrance of the Daleks. I remember watching Remembrance of the Daleks at the time. I hadn't been very impressed with the previous series. So when it started, when that 25th anniversary series started, and I watched Remembrance of the Daleks, I was absolutely blown away by how good it was back in 1988. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, I had a similar feeling. I never connected to Colin Baker, and I kind of watched it because, you know, there was not much else on. And then Time of the Rani was very much, I don't know, didn't really work. But like you said, it came to Remembrance of the Daleks. It's like, this is actually... But I think what's interesting as well, I think you're totally right. I think, you know, the Survival Rose connection is a big thing.
Yeah.
I think also there was, again, going on this line that I seem to be enjoying at the moment, the sort of romantic level of the new adventures, which very much looked to open up and break boundaries and do something new and sort of challenge and sort of find sort of new, wonderful, exciting, colourful and beautiful ways of the doing Doctor Who, which again, as you that also fed through into the new series because the writers of the new series had been sort of either interested in that era or were actually writing in that era. So you have this sort of, and I think that also helped give the McCoy era a certain amount of credibility. But even then, that was still being fought by the classicists who were furious at, you know, Venerinovich's transit novel with the comments about the sex worker and having the taste of semen in her mouth, which exploded with anger for many years to come. That how dare they? And all the swearing, and you don't do this in Doctor Who. You know, it should be like the Pertwee era. Oh, my God, wasn't Mind of Evil brilliant? And the Sea Devils, and it was amazing. It's like, yeah, they were good. But this is something different. And there was these battles that were kind of like this, because I think the McCoy era was doing, but what kind of thing, what Chibnall era was trying to do, to some degree, was trying to find new ground for the show. And the classicists just didn't like it. And funnily enough, we go in circles, don't we? And you could almost say the Chibnall era was doing a bit of that again. Whether it was successful or not is another matter, but it was certainly trying to find new grounds. You know, the female doctor, Timeless Child, you know, it was sort of going back and sort of trying to do a slightly different dynamic with the companions. It was trying to do different things. Again, like you said, it's we can all agree or disagree on how successful that was, but yeah, I can't even remember why we were talking about anything anymore.
Well, that's usually
why
that is usually the way the show goes.